All of the podcasts here at the Sideshow Network are now at the touch of a button on your iPhone and iPad. With the new Sideshow Network app, tune into all your favorite podcasts here at the Sideshow Network. Go to iTunes App Store, search for Sideshow Network, and download our free app to stream all of your favorite Sideshow Network podcasts at any time you want. The top comedians in the world are at your fingertips with the Sideshow Network app for iPhone and iPad.
All right, welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. My name is Chris Denson. To my right, as you cannot see, is Diana Williams.
I'm waving.
Waving. Let's do the wave. Can we do the wave with it? Whee! All right, that was awesome. The reason we're doing the wave is because we're celebrating our latest guest, Dan Goods. Right? It's in, yep. There's an S on the end.
Yes, it's like canned goods or dry goods.
Right. You're almost like a rapper now. It's like, canned goods, Dan Goods. Yeah. You did let me have it one time when I referred to you as good. I think either caught you on a bad day or you just get it too often. I will let you introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do.
Okay. I'm Dan Goods, and I am an artist, designer, sort of creative thinker, and I get to run a little group at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab, where we do anything from art pieces that go to art museums that talk about what NASA does in more of an experiential way. I also do art projects outside of JPL at public and private institutions.
It's awesome. Has anybody ever told you your voice sounds like Jeremy Piven?
No, I don't even know who Jeremy Piven is. So
Entourage, the agent. So now everybody's going to think.
Yeah.
And we're like, wait a minute, is that Jeremy Piven acting? But just look him up when we get done with the show.
Sure. You can tell I haven't been watching a lot of TV recently.
Well, you've got your head in the clouds.
I got things,
so to speak, right? So title wise, when I look at LinkedIn, I see visual strategist. What the hell does that mean?
Yeah, well that's a good name. For someone trying to do a lot of creative visual stuff. And so it's pretty broad. Yeah, yeah. I know it's kind of a weird name, isn't it? Actually, there's a real story behind that, but I can't tell it.
So. Oh, man.
Yeah, I know.
You can't change the names to protect the innocent?
I know.
No,
it would cause too much strife. So
nice. No, it's always interesting having like titles like that, because it's always a good conversation piece, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
People are like,
what? Well, what I do is that when people say, what in the world is a visual strategist, is I bring out my business card. I don't happen to have one right now, but it doesn't matter because we're on radio.
Yes. So
and I have a
we're a step down from radio, just say. So
okay, step down. Okay. We are
we're on our way up.
Yes, but we are. Thank you, Sean. Yes, we are on our way up.
Awesome.
Says the man from the Sideshow Network, which is one of the largest podcast networks in the country, if not the world. Shameless plug.
So there you go. So what I do is I take out my business card, and it's a black business card with a grain of sand on it, and I have a hole drilled into that grain of sand. And so I show it to someone. I say, "This is a hole drilled into a grain of sand. And if this grain of sand were our galaxy, we live in the Milky Way galaxy. There's billions of stars in our Milky Way galaxy. This hole represents where we found thousands of planets. Actually, let me say that over again. This is where we found hundreds of planets." I'll try to do it when you're not laughing, so you can.
No. That's actually one of my favorite, pieces of yours, is just like, yes, let's have an engineer drill a hole in a grain of sand, and I think you explain it where it's like the known universe fills up six rooms with grains.
Yeah,
of sand. Look, I know your whole thing.
There you go.
And then that hole in that grain of sand is like our galaxy and what the other.
So the grain of sand is our galaxy, and the hole, which is a tenth of the size of the grain of sand, is where we found hundreds of planets that are around other stars. And we're going to find thousands of planets within that same hole, let alone the rest of our galaxy, which is that grain of sand, let alone the six roomfuls of sand.
And you've been doing this for how long?
For 10 years.
So, again, another LinkedIn reference. I look back and I see, no, like you almost didn't exist professionally before JPL, right?
At least
according to the link.
Yeah. Well, I used to live in Seattle, and I freelanced as a graphic designer up there. And so that was sort of my background. And then I went to Art Center College of Design, where I studied graphic design.
That's awesome. Were you going to ask something earlier? Well, I cut you off. I'm sorry.
Well, how did you get from graphic design and then to JPL?
Yeah.
What was that bridge looking like?
I'm going to read something to that point, and then I'm going to let you answer, because this is really cool. This is quoting you, by the way. while creating a pipe organ out of soda pop bottles, gardening at the Huntington Gardens, and designing four-dimensional objects, I developed a passion. It is to give people experiences where they interact with something beautiful, meaningful, and or possibly profound. You remember writing that?
I do.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that's, I feel like that's a good sort of transition to Diana's question, you know, which is how did you go from the pipe organ pop bottles to...
Yeah. Yeah, so there was a couple different things that was going on. One is that I had a instructor at Art Center that he's this old Chinese fellow, and you would ask him a question about how to do an ad for Nike. And he would tell you about the Roman Empire. He'd tell you about Atlantis, you know, like the true facts of Atlantis. He'd tell you about today's stock market. He wouldn't tell you anything about shoes, but at the end of it, somehow you knew exactly what you were supposed to do. And while I was there, I was in graphic design, and most of the graphic designers, they really cared about like what color you used and what typeface you used, but they didn't really care about the concept. And then there was ad students, and they had amazing big concepts that were crazy and weird and wild, but they couldn't design anything. So everything they did looked ugly. And then there was students that were called environmental design students, and they would create spaces. They would create. They would be within a room and create, do things to that room that would make it feel different. And by the materials that they used,
right.
And they would use like 1,000 ping pong balls in a space, and you'd be like, wow, what is that? And you'd never seen that before. And then there would be a concept behind it. But they would write like this 5-page long dissertation on why they did something. I didn't understand a word they were writing,
right.
But I loved what they were doing, and so I love. The big idea, you know, some conceptual idea. I love creating a space that can communicate that, but also do it in a beautiful, you know, artistic way. And so that was sort of one area.
Right.
And then the other thing is I got a chance to go work at Caltech for a summer. And I worked with an artist who was developing new ways of visualizing lots of data. And that's sort of a whole long story, but it was really cool. I got to swim like an otter for half an hour a day as research, and it was awesome to be swimming back and forth in a pool.
Did they throw a little ball at you and you had to bounce it on your nose?
Well, I would go way down and up and flip and twist, and there'd be an old, you know, Caltech professor. He's kind of looking over, and he's like, what are you doing? And I'd say, oh, I'm doing an experiment, and I'm swimming like an otter. And he's like, oh, that's great, you know. So that was awesome. So that was my first experience working with scientists.
So what does an experience like that give you, right? Like what when you're swimming like an otter?
Yeah. What was the thesis?
Yeah,
to that?
You need to understand why I was doing that. So scientists collect so much data that we can't comprehend it all. So, well, you can even just think about YouTube. You know, every second, billions of things are going
right
on top of YouTube, and that's a lot of information. And they're collecting lots of information about things that it's hard to understand, usually. And they're trying to look at all this information. You know, like when you trying to think, like if you're standing someplace and you're, like, listening to the crowd, you can pick out a few different voices. Well, their instruments can pick out, you know, like a million voices.
Right.
And then they have a million of these things in lots of different formats, and they're trying to figure out how in the world do I understand, comprehend this stuff.
Right. Percentages, statistics, and, you know, stuff that it gets so minuscule that it's just hard for the average person to go.
Well, it's hard for them. Right. It's hard for them to understand what they're looking at. And so what my job was to do is try to come up with ways in which they could look at lots of information but absorb more of it.
Right.
And so when you look at colors, you know, you can see a certain amount of colors, but there's only so many colors that you can sort of quickly read between, you know, like,
right,
you know. And so what he was having me do is look at the way in which transparency and iridescence, so iridescence is sort of like shimmering different colors, how could those two qualities – allow you to get a little bit more information than what they're already getting. And so swimming like an otter was swimming in water with the sun reflecting off of the water, and there's lots of iridescence on that very top surface, and there's lots of transparency and opacity. And so I'm not really a swimmer, so this was a new world for me.
I swam for 15 years, if anybody cares.
Well, you know, so you wouldn't have gotten to do this because you would have been so sensitized to that world. Now, I wasn't sensitized to that world, and so that allowed me to kind of see it maybe in a little bit different way. And then I took lots of pictures and kind of made various prototypes, and eventually I came up with a sort of a visual search engine where they could where things that iridesced and things that were transparent and translucent kind of gave them more insight on what they were trying to find out.
Got it. I think I got it.
Yeah.
But here's what I love about what you do, right? Like, you take concepts like that, like, which, you know, half of our three listeners probably won't understand. But then, you translate that into a digestible form that's really accessible by the masses. I meant to bring this book in. I have a book that I have an 8-year-old daughter, and there's a book that's like, oh, here's all these weird questions about the world. And there was one that was about space and the universe. And even reading that, and it's designed for kids, I'm like, huh? But I can look at it, we can have this grain of salt or this grain of sand conversation, and I get it, right? And I also say, like, sort of as marketers, our job is to translate and come up with a strategy to either visualize or turn something into an experience, turn principles into an experience. So to do that with NASA, like, you know, give us some other examples of how that's come to live in the real world, where you're taking a concept and turning it into something that people can actually digest and understand.
Yeah. So what I always try to do is try to understand what is the essence of what they're working on. And I think it's a lot same as a marketer, I would assume, is that you're trying to figure out what is the essence of something. And then telling people about it in a way that's beautiful and compelling and mysterious and also meaningful. Right. And so one project I have is called The Hidden Light. And The Hidden Light is about trying to find planets. This goes back to the planets around other stars.
Right.
So this is really hard to find planets around other stars. I don't know if you've tried to do that.
I have not. No,
okay. No, not recently.
you haven't? Okay.
I will tonight, though.
You will tonight. So when you look up at the sky, you see all those dots up there, and those things are a long, long ways away. And we're finding out that most of these things all have planets like Jupiter, like other, sized planets going around them. Now, when we just kind of stand here and look up there, we can't see that because they're so far away. And so they give the analogy of trying to find a firefly in front of a spotlight that's in New York if you're in L.A. So okay. I don't know if you can do that, but I can't. So that's really hard. So that analogy is really fascinating, right? And so so what we're trying to do is trying to see in the midst of this bright light something that's super, super, super dim.
Right.
And so I kind of create this phrase, and I like to find little phrases that allow me to explore. And so this is what I call directed play. So I get a little bit of direction, and then I play in that direction. And so the direction here is, how do you block out a bright light to see a really dim light? And so what I ended up putting together is I have a really, really bright projection shining against the wall, and this projection kind of feels like a sun. It's like this yellow and red pixelation. And when people walk up to this installation, that's all they see. They don't see anything else. But people love to do shadow puppets. And so they kind of go in and they, someone
that's
is
the only one
do
I know,
that.
Actually.
I'm glad you laughed. Okay, there you go. So eventually someone has to do it. They just can't help themselves.
Their hand like burns off because the light is so bright.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's the sun. Watch
no, wrong one.
It's our own Pavlovian kind of response. We see a light. We do this. Exactly.
That's a terrible shadow puppet dog you just did, by the way.
It
almost looked like Nanu Nanu, like Mork and Mindy.
Okay,
that's all right. You can do
on,
Nanu
please.
Nanu. So I have this really bright projection up on a wall, and it's so bright that you can't see the other projection that is also being projected on that wall. So the really bright projector is about waist high, and it's straight on to the wall. The other projector is way up high at an angle. So what happens is when people walk in front or do shadow puppets or nanus in front of the bright projection, their shadow goes up on the wall, and inside their shadow they can see the other projection, which has like planets going by and water, because we're looking for evidence of water. And so what's fun about this is that the first person kind of goes out there and kind of plays around, and everyone kind of giggles, and then they go, oh, there's something there. You know, did you see that? You know, you see that thing? And then someone else walks out there, and then more people. And it's usually really big, so it takes like 8 people to block out the whole thing. And so then they're all invested in it. It becomes sort of a community type event.
So they're all like, I mean, not all of them, but that example in particular is super interactive, right? Mm-hmm. And it gets people engaged, like physically engaged and mobilized within the experience. Is there a payoff, right? Like, you know, because it's, again, explaining a scientific concept, you know, where do I learn what that additional piece of media was.
Yeah, so there would be some sort of description somewhere that just says the high level, you know, we've found hundreds of planets around other stars. It's hard to find them because stars are bright and planets are really dim. And then just some sort of little description that gives people a connection that then they go, aha, you know.
Right. No, I mean, what I love about this, I mean, just in terms of, again, it's that translation, and especially when, you know, NASA or JPL has a brand, right? Like, they have a product, and they have a purpose and a goal, and it's, you know, any organization needs the support of the masses in some sort, or at least a subset of the masses, and this is a great way to do it. There's another one that that also fascinated me was the weather patterns with can you explain?
So
I'm not going to have you go through your entire catalog of work, but that one was really interesting as well, just because it was more centered on our planet.
Yeah, well, that one actually. So that one is called the eCloud. That was not a JPL project.
Oh, okay.
So that was a big. You have to see the video. It yes. makes much more sense.
I've tried to explain it to people. Trust me.
Yeah.
Most times I get like 3 blinks.
When you see it, then you go, wow. Hopefully you say, wow, it's cool. But there is another. Let's see. Trying to think about Earth-based ones. So I lead a team of other creative people. So now on my team, I have a product designer. I have a film and special effects person. I have an architect. Someone who just graduated from SciArc. And someone who was in advertising and what was the other thing I was going to say about him? Anthropology.
Mm.
And so one project that we have been working on recently, and just kind of came out in the news, is a robot. And there's a robot that they're calling RoboSimian. So RoboSimian is a DARPA competition. DARPA is sort of a military
Diana's
think tank.
Nodding her head.
Yeah.
Knows it.
Military.
But this one, so they have, DARPA has various competitions, but this one is actually to build a robot that is like a first responder for something like Fukushima or something like that.
Wow.
So for a robot to be able to go into a bad situation. And when you go into a bad situation and you look like this robot, this one's, the way it moves is just bizarre. You need to see the video. Just go on YouTube, look for RoboSimian.
Yeah. RoboSimian.
Yeah,
got
and, it. And it moves really bizarre. And if you were like in Fukushima and, you know, under some rubble or something like that, and this thing were to be crawling out towards you, you would just rather die, right? You know,
you're like, so
is,
no.
it, is it large? Is it small? Like what?
It's pretty small. It's sort of like it's sort of like if I got on my hands and knees, or maybe you're a little bit bigger than I am. So,
thank you.
So you bet. So it's not all that big, but you know it's
got it.
Has a size.
No, I'm just trying to think of, like, again, to the point, like if I saw me crawling towards me in the midst of
this. But just imagine you where you have multiple joints and they can all move 180 degrees. Think about that. So there's no front. So you can't. So it can.
I'm like scared. Like I'm literally scared listening to this.
It's like a flagellum, then a flagella, right? Because it kind of can move front and back, or some sort of like a microscope or amoeba.
Think of a spider that's going forward, and it can move backwards. But what's crazy is those legs can swing up, and move, like if there was a ladder above it, it could move just as if it were on the ground, but above itself.
I'm like literally it's terrified right now.
So, South Korean
so you,
horror.
You want to go, yes,
that's
exactly.
What this is. This is a South Korean
so
horror.
So that's exactly the point. So they, this guy who's leading the team, he said, Dan, well, first off, he came because he really wanted a cool image to sell the product, right? To sell it to DARPA. You wanted something that was nice for everyone to see.
Right.
And you need those images, right? You need the hero shot that this thing's going to come and help. But people on the team, they were like, well, you know, have we talked to first responders? You know, like, what do they want in a robot? So right. We started to do research on that. And then we started to think about, well, how do first responders around the world mark themselves? You know, how do you? What kind of colors do you use? What kind
right.
of textures do you use? That sort of thing. And then we looked at like a Saint Bernard and a panda, and they have like you look at their eyes,
yes.
and they're very compassionate looking.
And they're both delicious, by the way.
I haven't tasted them.
Oh well.
So, but then you also look at cars. If you look at the front grills of cars, car companies spend a lot of money on those things because it has sort of a face. And if you look at lots of them, some of them look happy, you know, or friendly. You think of a Volkswagen Beetle,
right.
And then,
well,
then
Disney's banking on that, so
yeah. And then you look at other cars, and they're mean and aggressive because the people who drive it are, you know, awesome. You know, with this awesome car, and I'm just going to blow you away with it, right? So there's that whole spectrum, and so we kind of looked at all that and the various references, and thought, you know, well, what do we want this thing to portray? Because it's got to still have some heroicness to it, but we don't want to freak people out, but we want people to know that it is there to help you. It's not really there to like pick you up and drag you back. It's more just to go in there and sense the chemicals in the air and
right.
that sort of stuff. But still, you don't want to freak people out. And so looking at all that reference, we ended up coming out with this sort of vision for the future for what this thing might look like. And hopefully, if you look up RoboSimeon, you'll kind of get a sense of where that was coming from. And so what was cool about that?
We're talking,
you
yeah.
have to see this amoeba,
yeah, I know, right? This
amoeba
has to be real
South
time.
Korean horror thing.
So there's two different parts. There's one which is sort of like the illustration of what it might look like in the future. But then on YouTube, there's a video, and it's pretty crazy. It was fun because it barely worked when we were supposed to film it, and because we're just barely building it. They just put on the limbs, and they didn't really have time to test it. And
RoboSimeon resembles a robot monkey is one of the descriptions. Is that
the JPL news?
Yes, construction at JPL. Yep. Oh, I'm going to turn the volume off. Sorry, guys. So, I mean, again, just like really interesting, and it's kind of taking those kind of, I'm going to call them brand principles, right? Like you mentioned, the look, the feel, the texture, the colors, how people are going to respond to it. It's almost like if somebody's drowning, they talk about how lifeguards are usually, you're going to have to fight the person you're saving,
yes.
Yeah,
you know, but,
yeah.
but it's almost to a point where that's almost to your advantage in a weird way, and to kind of I'm looking at this thing now. It is as creepy as I thought it was gonna look. It's throwing me off. What I want to know also is just kind of like, how do you measure success at JPL, right? Because we find in the show, we get really talk to a lot of marketers and agencies and other innovators in other spaces, but also look at some of the common threads that they face. And a lot of times I'm part of the innovation think tank at such and such agency, and it's just like, you're out there doing God knows what, and certain people are going to go, either they're going to support you or not, or, you know, just kind of like, how do you measure success at work? You know, what are your deliverables?
Well, that's a little bit different. My deliverables and how I measure success. But
sure.
So for me, the reason I do this is that when I walk up to someone who's experienced like one of the art installations that we produced, and they have. Well, I like to say that I want to be able to create a moment of awe. I want people to have a moment of awe about the universe that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And when they have that moment of awe, that's, you know, I've succeeded.
Right.
And I feel like that you know, when people get to experience these things and when they make the connections, then they're a different person. You know, they're like, you know, I've never thought about planets around other stars. I've never watched a NASA documentary, but I went to this music festival and there was this thing there by a guy from NASA, and it, you know, I never would have expected to see it there.
Right.
And so I love that. And then also, I'm hoping that our team and having more people that are creative in the worlds that we're creative in have a true and lasting impact on the way in which JPL works in the future. And, right. and I feel like that's happening, that we're getting involved in areas that they never would have originally thought that artists and designers would be involved in. So we're actually getting involved in the brainstorming of future missions, which is awesome, yeah. you know? And I feel like people come into our office and our studio, and this is what I've always wanted, and it's beginning to happen more now, is where people come in, they're like, you know, I'm not sure why I'm here, but I know I should be.
Right.
and what's great is they say, you know, we don't know what to do in this area or that area. Help us out. You know, we know you guys are creative thinkers. How can you help us?
Now, are these people, like, when you say people come in, like, what? Yeah.
So it's not people off the street.
hey, guys.
That would be awkward. Okay. Yeah.
can I get a lift?
Yeah, going to Mars. Exactly. You know, that would be fun, though. Maybe not. So JPL is a big place. It's a big campus. There's 5,000 employees, and there's 1,500 contractors, and I can't remember how many square acres there is, but watch out for that.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you. I hit the microphone just in case you guys wanted to know what...
Jumped right at him.
So it's a huge place. We have, like, 15 deer that are on campus, and they don't leave, and they don't care that you walk, you know, that you're trying to get around them. So we have our own power station, our own ambulance, and we have a...
So basically we need to head to you when the zombie apocalypse happens.
It's, yes, right to, yeah, JPL. Exactly.
Got it.
That's where I'm going.
I hope there's snacks.
You'll be there. Like, oh, look, they're trying to get in.
So think of JPL as a big city that has business units. And so we have, like, the Earth business unit. So lots of missions that work with Earth, studying the Earth in various ways. And then we have the solar system, and then we have Mars, and then we have the universe as another business unit. And so all these people are trying to do their work, and then they come to us for various things. And so sometimes people come to us to communicate an idea, and that could be a video, or it could be a, you know, an art installation or something like that. Or they come to us to help them build a new facility. And so we've actually worked on creating innovation centers at JPL.
Right.
We've worked on redesigning control centers. And
First of all, it's a beautiful campus.
Campus.
It's beautiful. And I got to see some of your, like, in almost like interior design work, right? Like, because there are certain creative spaces in there where it's kind of like, this is the think tank room. Don't come in here with your computer, but, you know, and you've really done a great job of redefining textures. And I look at that, you know, it's setting that precedent for, I always look at things that set an example or change perspective for someone who visits. So when I think about workspaces, and, you know, most, if you go into a writing room or a brainstorm room, it's like, oh, you've got the rubber ball or you've got these toys. But really, you started talking earlier a little bit about, like, textures and looks and feels and, mm-hmm. like, turning things upside down. Can you give us some examples of just at least one of those kind of creative spaces and some of the things you've introduced there that kind of change the way people interact with thought and ideas and brainstorming?
Yeah, well, I think that there's two different rooms that I like to talk about. One is called Left Field, so the ideas come from Left Field. And
I got it.
I'm there, I got it.
There we go.
Good one, Danos.
Got that one across there. So it's big. We have, like, these 30-foot long by 8-foot tall whiteboards and lots of... The whole idea of this space is that it's very easy to have an idea and have that be your little baby, and you don't want to give it up, right? You don't want it to change at all. This is my idea, and this is the way I want to do it. But that may not be the best way to do it. And so what we try to do is help other scientists or people at NASA expand the possibilities. And so they go into this room, and the whole room is sort of centered on trying to make sure that no one feels like there's anything permanent. Because as soon as there's something permanent, then that sort of sticks you in a direction.
Right.
And so this is a spot to not be stuck. And so everything about the room is modular. The tables move. It'll look completely different one day from the next.
Right.
And so everything that we tried to introduce into that room, we wanted that feeling that you weren't going to, you know, that it wasn't permanent. There's another room that we call, it's the Mechanical Design Center. And that room, I like to try to put a story in a room. And so this room, they sort of design all the actual hardware. So once something's done from left field, it goes to another place, and hopefully they win the mission. And then the Mechanical Design Center is where they actually have to build the stuff.
Right.
And so there's this crazy
robot
trapezoid, something like that, that held on to the rovers that went to Mars 10 years ago, and this was a duplicate of it, and it's really cool looking, but it's this bizarre shape, and it was sitting in a big honking piece of aluminum, and it was sitting in storage, and we were walking around storage looking for something that could become a table. And we saw that thing, and we said, oh, that would be awesome as a table, and we polished it up and put glass on it. And it's a great story to be able to say, you know, the people who made that rover on Mars, you know, they used this thing to test with, and now it's our table.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. And so I always think that whenever you have a space, there needs to be a story that kind of brings a different feeling to the space.
Is that the room in itself is an inspiration? Right, and the bits and pieces, and like knowing the stories. You told a story before about a table that was made with paper, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, it's just stacks and stacks of paper. It's almost as solid as this wood, mm-hmm. but it just feels slightly different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
It is. You know, I'm going to cheat here, but one of the questions we always ask people is to fill in the blank, and I say, innovation to me is right, and they have all these different things, and it is kind of the common thread is rethinking, you know, people say it in different ways and shapes and forms, but that's, you know, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. You talked a little bit about your personal success. What does the company view as success for you? Like, you know, they say, all right, we just spent X amount of dollars on this exhibition. We better have like,
but to also ping off of that, if, you know, for the audience member listening to this, if they're thinking...
Singular. Singular even. That was cruel.
If they are thinking... I mean, everyone has that view. They have that view of NASA, that Apollo 11 from the film shot of NASA. That's what they think of as scientists. That's as far as they go. So for that person that's wondering, well, what the hey are you doing at NASA? Why does this make sense? Can you talk to both of those questions as in terms of just giving the full spectrum as to why what you do is so important to allowing the scientists to continue on with what they're doing?
Yeah, well, have you ever heard an engineer trying to explain, you know, a robot to you? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, I think my left brain explodes.
So there are a few of them that are amazing, and there's you know, a number of scientists that are really good at that. But they've... they live in a world where they speak very technically to all their peers, and it's hard to get out of that techno speak.
Right.
And so, I'm not the smartest person on the block, and so
Dan,
just give it up.
Now, maybe on your block, maybe not on my block.
Hey, why is everybody on down and on me?
I'm not on his block, so we're all on the same.
I live actually a couple miles away from him.
No, yeah. So what I do is I try to ask them, you know, how would you explain this to your mom? And a lot of moms are really smart, but a lot of moms are smart in the things that they were accustomed to, and these young whippersnappers are doing, you know, weird stuff with technology and going to other planets that maybe my mom wasn't always associated with. And so so I just, you know, like, if I... My mom still doesn't really know what I do, you know?
Yeah. I don't think anybody's mom in this space.
Why is it always moms, you know, that's, gentlemen? Some fathers are not so hip.
Because my wife is a mom.
Yes.
You know, but she's your wife. Really, she kind of came, she's on this journey with you. Your mom kind of was like, I didn't expect you to turn out this way.
She's she's really smart. So I was saying that. Yeah, okay. So I just kind of dug myself in a hole there.
Oh, yeah.
We're nowhere near Mother's Day. It's okay.
I thought about that right as I was saying that. So, Well, anyways, you got to explain it to me. That's really what I want. You know, I want them to explain it to me. And you know, I'm not trying to have them dumb anything down. I just want them to speak clearly and plainly. And once they get to that point, then I can understand it. And then I feel like I'm pretty good at being able to go out and tell people about it. And the reason why NASA needs people like me and all that, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of other people that talk to the public, is that we spend your money. You know, we spend taxpayer dollars. And you have the right to know what the heck we're doing with your money.
Right.
And what we're doing with it is really cool. You know?
Yep.
And you won't know that unless someone who's trained in communicating communicates it. And so that's why it's really important. Otherwise, you guys would say, you know, what in the world are they doing with that money? Let's go use it for something else.
Right.
Well, what's cool is that also sounds like you're translating the excitement, because, like, what made that engineer so excited to continue with what he or she was working on is a different explanation as to how you bring that excitement to the public so they get why we should remain excited and continue to give money to NASA. Thank you very much.
And even to that point, I think that also makes the people who are making the stuff more excited, right? Like,
that's what I love, is that a lot of times they're so focused on details because they have a billion details that they have to figure out. Like, you look at the rover Curiosity that landed on Mars. I don't know if you saw the video.
I did.
Seven minutes of care. You look at that and you go, there's no way in the world that thing can happen.
Which is why so many people were watching it.
so there's a lot of people that are furiously trying to figure out details. And sometimes when you're trying to figure out, like, how this one little mechanism works and you work on that for 2 years, you forget, like, the bigger picture of why the heck I'm doing this thing. And so what I've loved is showing or giving talks even at JPL and showing them projects and having them go, you know, that just reinforced why in the world I'm here to begin with.
Right. And especially to hear somebody, it's that acknowledgement, right? Like, somebody understands, somebody gets me, and it's not just me.
Yeah.
And it's so important to have the kind of the creatives and the, you know, the engineers, even in, you know, in the marketing space, right? It's the people who are coming up with the concepts, and then there's the people who have to figure out how to make it work. Or you have a product, even if you make a Snickers bar, like, if I'm in the kitchen all day and like, oh, these are the best peanuts and this is such and such, you know what? Snickers really satisfies and people are going to eat it. There's this kind of like, where's the glue between what you're making and what an audience is going to like need to hear or see to appreciate it. That's really awesome. Are you ever planning on making a trip yourself off
to Mars? You know, I would love to. So George Whitesides was on, and I would love to do that. I so much want to see that edge of the atmosphere. I just think that'd be really awesome.
Yeah.
My wife is a little less excited for me to
it's the whole getting
to do
back
that,
thing.
You know,
that's what we're still kind of missing.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
It's well, not quite a return trip.
We can come back the Red Bull way and just jump.
Yeah.
We didn't train for this part.
That was funny because I skydived once and that wasn't all that exciting to me. It was kind of funny. I thought that was going to be really exciting, but basically, it was just like a whole bunch of air going up my nose and I couldn't
really
breathe.
Really cold air. The first time I jumped out of a plane, all I could think was, I should have brought a sweater.
Yeah.
I was like, this is really cold. I just wasn't. And you always hear about all those atmospheres, and all of a sudden you're like, it's cold.
Yeah, it's cold up here.
Well, I wasn't quite as high as, you know, the Red Bull thing. So, you know, I was up there and I was like, well, you know, this is a cool view, but because everything was so far away, it wasn't like if I haven't bungee jumped.
It wasn't a complete
picture.
But
I can imagine. Right. I can imagine what's freaky is when you see the movement, you mm-hmm. realize how fast you're going.
Right.
When you're skydiving, you don't realize it until you get,
9.8 meters per second per second.
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
You realize, I'd
oops.
Oh, right. That's
yeah.
Important.
It just went by that.
That's the bad part. But so I don't, I have friends who are interested.
Yeah.
So and I like the concept. It just I'd like to hang out with my family a little longer.
So you mentioned Red Bull. We just had kind of conversationally here, but also you consult a lot just on sort of you guys were talking about this when I walked in the room without me. I appreciate it, but no, I do want to know a little bit more about your consulting work and how you work with people outside of JPL and outside of your own artwork. To say, hey, here's a great way to present these, this concept or create this thing.
So I mean, I through my travels, I've met all sorts of interesting folks, and I give lots of talks and bump into interesting folks, and so sometimes people see the art projects that I do through JPL, and sometimes they see the art projects that I do outside of JPL, the eCloud at the San Jose Airport and the airfield at the Atlanta Airport. That's a brand new one that collaborated with Nick Hoffermas and Aaron Koblin for the first one. Sorry, I'm getting this all complicated.
That's fine. No worries.
The eCloud was done with Aaron Koblin and Nick Hoffermas, and then the airfield in Atlanta in a brand new terminal. It's a huge, huge data-driven sculpture that activates every time an airplane lands or takes off from the airport,
right.
Which is kind of fun. And that was done with Nick Hoffermas and a guy named Jamie Barlow. And so people see those things and they kind of look at the rest of the website and they go, maybe this guy can help us think through things. So I've been part of various brainstorming studies and helping guide conferences, maybe the content. And it's really kind of funny because I went to the TED conference and I bumped into this lady who's in the home building community. And I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting. I hate, most track home kind
right.
of places, And she wrote me up, and we really enjoyed each other's company at the conference. And she wrote me up, and she said, Dan, I'm trying to put together this this conference for the home building community. And it's about communities, creating communities. And we'd love to have you part of our initial brainstorming. And I'm like, holy cow, what? What is this?
Right.
And totally out of left field. And I thought, if I could have a small impact on the way in which communities are built, I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. And so what was really fascinating was that going to this room and there's like 15 people and they're all in, right? They build the homes, mm-hmm. they market the communities, they write the articles
right.
in the magazines, and they go around the table and the question is, why are you here? And there's a couple of people who said, whenever I watch, what's that TV show where the Home Makeover? I cry every time I watch that because I'm part of this community of creating homes for people.
Right.
And then other people talked about, various things.
I cry because I'm watching it with my wife.
Yeah. And I'm kind of sitting there and I'm going, wow, what in the world am I going to say? And so they got to me and I was next to last. And I said, my wife and I live with three kids in a two-bedroom apartment. And we live in South Pass and it's close to work, and our neighbors in our apartment, we're like best friends. They're like family. We can go to the farmer's market not too far away. And I said, we've been struggling. This was before the housing boom.
Right.
And should we go spend, the only house in LA that we could buy would be, a long ways away. do we go to buy a house? And I would be away from work more, so I can have that American dream. Or do we stay in our little tiny apartment with all of our kids and take cello lessons from our downstairs neighbor and get to hang out more. And I said, you know what? We chose that. So we're not going to buy a house, but I'm glad to be here. And you
crickets.
You can imagine, you know, everyone kind of looking around, but they absolutely loved it, and it really drove the whole conference.
The idea of community.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's
exactly
what it's about. Yeah.
Right, and also I think the takeaway for me personally is just bringing in a different perspective, mm-hmm. right? Because if I spend all day, you know, working on this one thing and with all my buddies and like, hey, let's think, you know, let's tomorrow, Tuesday at 2 o'clock, we're going to have a brainstorm.
Yeah.
And you guys have been here for 3-4, you know, years.
50.
Exactly. It's like bring in somebody completely different, right? You know, whether it's you or it's the janitor, everybody has a perspective and an experience in how they see the world.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. All of a sudden, I'm starting to go to more of these vision casting, you know,
get-togethers
with people building communities around the country. So it's kind of funny. So,
what's your zodiac sign?
Yeah, what's the zodiac? I don't know. I'm September. Is that like September 11th? Yeah. Actually, isn't
Virgo.
That great? So yeah,
Virgo, she says.
There we go. September 11th, my birthday.
No.
Always, everyone remembers it. So.
That's good. What's your zodiac sign, Dan?
Libra.
Capricorn. I have no idea what this stuff means. I'm not.
I don't
I'm not
even know into... where. How do we even get here?
Because it's astronomy, astrology, space. Come on. It was a stretch. It was a good one. Finish this phrase for me. I already gave you sort of the heads up, but innovation to me is.
Yeah, you know, I'm having a hard time saying that one off the top of my head because I've been trying to understand what people at JPL. Mean, but they've been trying. I've been hearing different people talk about what is the definition of innovation,
right?
And to them, it's not just doing something new and unique, but that it's doable and you do it. So until it's done, it's not innovation, which
right.
is really fascinating to me. So I never really
until
thought
until it's done, it's not innovation.
Innovation.
Yeah,
because the ideas are innovative, right?
So they don't want the journey to be the innovation.
Yeah, so JPL is full of thousands of super smart, very creative people. They have no problems getting creative, innovative ideas
right.
that most people would call innovative. But until we land on
until
Mars,
the rover, you know, lands, asking
it's innovation. Not you know, it's not. Well, maybe it's different. It's not an innovation. So innovative versus innovation,
right.
maybe that's a fine line, but until it's doable, you know, it's not an innovation. So
I agree. No, I 100% agree. You know,
a gerund or is it a noun? I mean, that's where we're at.
A what?
A gerund.
Gerund.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, if we're looking at it like, so is it a?
No, suddenly my intelligence quotient has just gone way down in this room.
You know. If JPL is looking at an innovation, so they're looking at it as a noun, as a thing, as a completed thing, not the journey, not the going, not the ing of it. Mm-hmm. So that's it's not the innovating, it's the innovation.
Well, there's
so
to me, it's kind of a two-pronged thing, right? There's a process that can be innovative, right? And, you know, the way you get there, the way you get to these new thoughts, for instance, the room that you talk about that you kind of redesigned, it's a tinker toy. And hopefully that process, which is innovative and new, will spark the innovation.
Innovation, yes.
Right? The end result. And it's just like that process of, you know, how are we going to get there? Like we've found like the target. And it's like, all right, now what are the... I met a woman, Mae Jemison, who was the first black astronaut to, you know, to leave the atmosphere. And one of the projects that she's gotten funded recently is called the 100-Year Starship.
Oh, wow.
And it is, you know, how to get to the next solar system in the next 100 years. Just so loft. Like, I'm like, okay, well, you know, part of me is kind of like, whatever. But the other part of me is like... You've been, you know, a percentage of the way there, you know, and you have the resources by which to at least think it through. And, you know, in 100 years is a long runway and you've got to you're defining the process by which to accomplish that goal. And you probably won't even be around to see the end result. So it's the handing down of the baton. That's my soapbox. Sorry, guys. You want to? Anybody else want to say anything?
I left my soapbox in the car.
Oh, man. Well, Dan, I want to thank you for joining us. I don't know if you have any questions for us. I don't.
Yeah. I have a question.
Oh, there we go. All right.
Please tell us your website. How can people learn more about you?
So you can just Google Dan Goods, or you can look up Directed Play. So directedplay.com.
Okay.
My website.
Great. I actually had that highlighted, so thank you. I had it highlighted on my notes, and I cut to the I'm so sorry. But this
I'm
has,
here to help. That's what I'm here to help.
You've been, you've been I'm wonderful. Glad you're looking out for me.
I am. I'm all about you, Dan Goods. All about you.
Hey, man, you're going to get at least 7 new followers after this.
Exactly. What is your Twitter handle?
Yeah, you know, it's Dan Goods, but I wouldn't sign up. I wouldn't follow me to, you know, follow me a whole lot.
So. I wouldn't follow me a whole lot.
I got too many things to do to Twitter, you know? Yeah,
there was a guy in here who has 30,000 Twitter followers, and his schedule sounded so busy. I'm like, how do you do it? You know, but anyway, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
This has been another Innovation Crush. Thank you, Dan, for stopping by. This has been an awesome conversation. Thank you, Diana, for being my guest co-host.
You are welcome.
Thank you, Sean, for waiting so patiently to press that stop button. And we will talk to you later.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.